We've seen our government talk constantly about having a sovereign wealth fund. I don't know how you get a sovereign wealth fund when you're predicting that you're going to have 5 trillion rands worth of debt by 2024, but certainly it is a goal of government to get a sovereign wealth fund. But sovereign wealth funds aren't easy to create. You do need surpluses. You do need massive export revenues that you can then squirrel away for a rainy day. A bit like Norway. Now, Norway has got a $1.3 trillion sovereign wealth fund, and it is now beginning to rely on that sovereign wealth fund more than ever. It's spending in Norway to help it out of the recession that has come about as a result of COVID-19. And that's different between them and us is we have to go to bond markets. We have to go to lenders who say, we think you're a bit risky. We think you're not going to be able to contain the public sector wage bill. We're worried about the future. And so what Norway's got at its disposal is a big fat piggy bank with lots of cash in it. And so the government in Norway sees the need to provide fiscal support. And what it does is it dips into the national piggy bank, the wealth fund built out of North Sea oil revenue. And it shielded them from the worst of the pandemic and the economic fallout as a result of that. But government is beginning to withdraw more than I think many Norwegians would like. And I think there's a little bit of panic. But hold on a second, you can't just rely on it as a fund of last resort. It is purely an emergency fund. But what a luxury to have if you are a country like Norway that has been sensible enough over the years, rather than to allow state-owned enterprises to run at massive losses and to keep funding them regardless of the business case. They have made sensible investment decisions and have worked very hard to build up a sovereign wealth fund. It's the only way, really, that you can end up doing it. Arthur Goldstuck joins us now. He is the managing director at Worldwide Works. And a warning today by one of the biggest makers of computers in the world, Michael Dell. So we should treat him seriously. They even named a computer after him. This chip shortage that we've been talking about for some time is actually going to be quite protracted. It could be around for not only months, but possibly years, Arthur Goldstuck.
Good evening, Bruce. Yes, indeed. In fact, the word or the term supply chain has suddenly become a common phrase for people who always thought that was just where you got your latest fix. Now it's going to be your digital fix that you're going to need from the supply chain. And the supply chain is constrained globally for chip manufacturers. And for two main reasons. One was no one expected the massive demand for computers during 2020 as everyone began to work from home, or at least all those who were what you would call information workers began to work from home. And then they also didn't count on the fact that cutting down on production in the early stages of the pandemic because of people not being able to work in factories would have such a long-term knock-on effect.
And it's enormous, and it's having a huge impact on multiple things, not just our laptop computers at home or cell phones, although they'll be massively affected, of course. It goes to multiple devices because the world was increasingly getting into being this super connected world where every device in the home ultimately would talk to the internet, or the internet would talk to them, or they talk to each other over the internet. And without microchips, that process has got to be surely delayed.
There's no question about it. Every major appliance now uses microchips, even if they're not connected appliances. Excuse me. For example, your washing machine, your fridge, your oven all now use microchips. Even the toasters tend to use microchips. And what this means is that if you want to buy a new model of almost any one of these major appliances, you're going to be on a waiting list. And the demand is going to be a little like what we've seen with the PlayStation 5, where they simply cannot keep up with demand, and as they bring a new supplier to market, it sells out instantly. If you're lucky enough to get onto a waiting list in South Africa, you're going to wait a few months, and when it arrives, you'll be lucky to actually be one of the recipients of a small supplier that's coming to market. And Sony were, in fact, one of the great beneficiaries of the demand for home entertainment, but also one of the great victims of not looking after their supply chain at the beginning of the pandemic. In fact, they postponed their orders for chips, apparently. This is fairly common knowledge, but they haven't acknowledged it. And when they realized that the demand was going to be huge and they tried to get back in line, they couldn't. So the result is massive constraints in supplying PlayStations to a very ready market. And you're going to see that across all sectors.
What does this mean, though, longer term then, when we look at it, Arthur? I mean, does this create opportunity for other games manufacturers to steal a march, perhaps, on Sony with PlayStation? PlayStation so big, so dominant, so expensive. Actually, maybe it's an opportunity for competitors, if they've got decent supply chains, to capitalize on this strategic faux pas.
It's a big opportunity for Microsoft because the Xbox, which is not as much in demand as the PlayStation, is available precisely because Microsoft didn't cut back on their orders, on their chip supply chain. And the result is that they are sitting pretty. So it's probably a big opportunity for them, but both of those are going to be highly profitable as a result of the demand, because it means they don't have to discount, their margins are going to be high, and they'll be sitting very pretty. Same with Apple, with the iPhones, which are also being constrained by the shortage of chips. In fact, the mobile phone sector will be the most heavily affected, but it's expected that revenues from mobile chips are going to grow something like 23% this year. This is an IDC forecast. That's massive. So despite the shortage, the high margins are going to be non-negotiable, and that's going to be very profitable for a lot of these manufacturers.
I mean, how old is the microchip? What, 20 years old? 30 years old? How old is the microchip?
I think it goes back to the 1960s.
Okay. But I mean, they've revolutionized the world. I mean, and now we can't survive without them, and everything that we do is heavily dependent on a thing that, you know, to the naked eye seems so massively insignificant. But it's just this incredible hotbed of technological ability.
In fact, we're going to become even more dependent on them as artificial intelligence starts driving a lot of our activities. And we saw a company like NVIDIA, for example, which specializes in gaming chips or chips for a gaming machine, suddenly seeing their share price rocket because it was found that their graphics processing chips were ideal for artificial intelligence processing because of the complex level of processing that they allow. And that, I think, is also going to partly shift the whole world of chip manufacture, but also people of what can be achieved with chips. And one other thing, I think just to point out very quickly, Intel appointed a new CEO, Pat Gelsinger, who is also transforming their ability to produce high-end chips. They're falling behind the market dramatically. So expect Intel also to come in with a new play.
Thank you, Arthur Goldstuck, Managing Director at World